Folks, I've talked to you about this before. Distilled. You are looking to get a nice pair of denim jeans. It's hard to find a perfect pair. You know how hard it is. You go to different places, stores, outlet malls, whatever. You can't find the jeans that are right for you. This is a James changer. This is a game changer, James. James, this is a game changer. You listen to me, James? It's Distilled, D-S-T-L-D, luxury grade denim, James, at an affordable price. Jeans that would normally cost you hundreds, Distilled has starting at just $75. You know, I've talked to you about this before. You have to listen to me. They utilize the same fabrics, factories, and wash houses as the best known brands in the business. So we skip the markups and middlemen. The result is pure unadulterated denim without the retail runaround. Just go to distilled.com and see where minimalist design meets maximum comfort. Just go to distilled.com now.
Oh, well.
Excuse me. And use the protocol. Use the protocol promo code office at checkout and get 20% off. That's 20. Not two, 20% off jeans. They're already cheap. They're already affordable. Now you're getting 20% off. You just put in the access code. Do it now. That's Distilled promo code office. Five letters. All you need to know, folks. DSTLD.com. It's Thursday morning and Sunday morning coming up in a couple of days. Good morning. My name is Tim Heidecker. I am your host today. Ron Baldwin in the chat right now. Ron Baldwin listening live. Who else we got in there? I'm going to read off some names. Elijah Howard is with us. Elijah Suzanne Wilkins. Jason, thanks. Good to see you, Jason. Great to see Scarlett joining the team, the Office Hours team. Marilyn Heidecker, my wife. Eric and Sanati. Everybody is joining. David Schmidt, thank you so much, Dave. Thanks for coming, Nick. Thanks for coming. And everybody come on in. Everybody call your friends and family and share the information now that we can experience this wonderful community. You're sitting around at work, or maybe you're lucky enough to already be in the Christmas vacation time period. At this point, we're just hot puppy all day long. Just a transitional experience for all of us. Wonder how many of you guys are going to go out caroling with a hot puppy in the set list. It's a challenge. You got to memorize some of those horn sax solos. If you were going to do, here's a question we can have people call in with this. If you were going to carol, Christmas carol with hot puppy, how would you do it? We'll have some auditions on how to carol hot puppy. I have my own ideas about that. Let's get the calls going, get into the show. Nick Dunn, you're on the line. Hi, Nikki.
What's going on, Tim? How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
Oh, you know, I got to turn off all these sounds or we're going to have a big problem. Matt, could you try to do this for me? There should be a way to turn off all the ringing.
Is this better?
No, it's not for you. It's me. I have a new computer set up here, and there's a preference to turn off all sounds. Notifications, that's it. There you go. All right, Nick, how can I help you today? You are a little quiet, though, and I'm trying to adjust on my end, but...
All right, I'll speak up. Is that good?
Keep talking.
All righty. So
there we go. Got you.
I just had a question. Just wanted to get a little abstract here. I know in the past...
Okay, hold on. We're still dealing with this issue here. Where is this?
Okay.
Notifications is not... Stop notifications. Notifications preferences. It's a disaster, folks.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I have to restart Skype, Matt. What do you think? All right, listen to this. All right, Nick, you'll be my first caller. I'm going to restart and we'll start again.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Okay. Dum daddy, dum da do, dum da do. By the way, I have my friend Matt here is joining us just to observe and help out, and obviously has been no help so far. But all right, so I turned off. If anyone wants to chime in on this on the chat, a better way of turning off all ringing and dinging when you're in Skype, I think. Maybe you just had to restart. All right, I'm back on Skype. Let's see what Tim Harris looks a little scary. Johnny Lamb. Johnny.
Hey, Tim.
Okay, that seemed to have fixed it. Thank goodness. We turned off some settings, restarted. We're back online. Johnny Lamb legs. Johnny Lamb legs. Yeah, Nick, I see you there. You're my next call. Go ahead.
You listened to my music, said it was good. I appreciate it a lot. Gave me a little bit of...
Actually, this is not Johnny Lamb. This is John Lennon. This goes by JL, and he's been in hiding for, what is it now, almost 40 years, 35 years or something? How long is since he was supposedly assassinated? And this is the big out. This is the big coming out party for John Lennon. John, where have you been?
I need to get away from the old ball and chain.
Right. Well, it's good to have you back. Now, unfortunately, we still can't have a full reunion of the Beatles because of the passing of George Harrison. Or is he in hiding as well?
I can't tell you that. Sorry.
All right. Well, how else can I help you today, Johnny Lamb?
No, I don't know. I just wanted to say hi, and man, I really like your work. I guess I don't have that much to say yet.
Where are you calling from?
From Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we've talked before. I do like your music. This guy, how do people find your music?
It's Johnny Lamb. I have one video up on YouTube and on SoundCloud.
There you go. Look out, Johnny Lamb. It's very beautiful acoustic old guitar style music, correct?
Oh, thanks.
For a little Brazilian. Well, listen, I'm going to take Nick Dunn because he was the first caller, but thanks for calling in, Johnny, and good luck. Happy holidays. Nick.
Hello.
Yes, we fixed the technicals, and we are live, sounding beautiful. I think everyone's enjoying the show so far. Excellent. By the way, just quickly, before I get to your question, we're going to have a couple of calls today, a couple of guests, I should say, actual guests. One was going to be Dave Weigel is calling in from the Washington Post, but he's calling in to plug his new book that's now available for pre-order. Welcome to the show that never ends, I believe it's called. It's a book about prog rock. So if you have some prog rock questions, get them in. And then later in the show, my dear cousin and close confidant, Kalu Henry, has also is putting out a book, a cookbook. We're going to talk to her about that. So it's a real live radio show today, folks, with you helping to make it great. Nick, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, I was going to ask a question about the whole like Vic Berger, Mike Cernovich thing, but that's a real downer. I don't really want to get into that. And it's not really worth even mentioning his name, really.
It's not worth mentioning Vic's name. I agree.
No. Wow.
I know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, let's keep the energy positive today.
Yeah.
I will say real quick, let's send our love and support to Vic Berger out there. He needs us now more than ever. If he's ever made you laugh or if he's ever made you smile, which I know this listening audience can attest to that, he's provided so much enjoyment and entertainment this year through his hard work at no cost to you, let me add. At no cost to you. It just comes up on the internet and you just see it.
Hell yeah.
So he's under attack right now by the bad guys. I talked to my friend last night, and you know who I'm talking about. When I'm talking about friends, these are good people that you love too. They go, this is literally just like, these are just villains. Bad guys like out of a comic book or something. So Vic's under siege right now. If you want to
find out some practical things that you can actually do today that we believe are helpful, I would suggest going to his Facebook page. There's some stuff he posted there that will, I think are actual, pragmatic, realistic things that you guys out there can do to help our friend. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Now you wanted to talk about something else.
Yes. Just keep away from that negativity. So I just wanted to ask you, I guess, kind of something abstract about, irony. And in the past, I think you've been hesitant to call your humor and your work ironic, but there still seems to be like a certain link between irony and your work. I was wondering what you thought or how you think irony relates to your work, and like, what are your problems with just irony?
I don't know if I've ever distanced myself from the idea of irony in my work. It's one of those words that gets misused. I don't know if I could give you what's your definition of irony anyways? Like, cause it's been like 20 years since I've gone to Matt. Do you have the legal definition of irony? You want to look it up and then we can kind of work from there. Look it up. And, I guess it's like a detachment from, it's a detachment from, sincerity or mm-hmm. not, you know, being intentionally deceptive for a reason, not just most of my work has an element of irony in there, and I don't distance myself from it. Here's the definition: the expression of one's meaning by using language that normally signifies the opposite, typically for humorous or emphatic effect. Most of my work is ironic because it's usually the presentation of something that's not how I truly feel. It's sort of usually the opposite. So if I'm, you know, doing a stand-up routine where I'm endorsing Donald Trump, that's ironic. If I'm on cinema, you know, yelling at Greg, that's a character, but it's also ironic. Mm-hmm. It's not, I think, so I don't have a problem with irony. Although it's interesting to have made a body of work that largely is uses ironic devices and tools, that to then explore stuff outside of the boundaries of irony, mm-hmm. because then there's contrast with that.
Mm-hmm. You get it? Don't you see?
I just feel like that your humor is very ironic, but it gets to a place of great sincerity. You know, it kind of reveals something.
Cuts down to the bone.
Very human to perhaps, people, you know?
That's what perhaps irony can do best, is cut down to the bone of the situation, reveal, you know, when I endorsed Donald Trump on cinema, the goal there was to present somebody that was so inept and foolish that's revealing the type of person who would go ahead and endorse him.
I was wondering if you thought irony can be misused, when like irony can be turned on to things that might be positive or generative or good. Like, there are certain TV shows that I won't name that kind of heavily use irony, but they kind of twist it in a way. I don't know how else to say it.
I can't comment on it if you don't tell me what the specifics.
Well, I was thinking of, in particular, like a show like Million Dollar Extreme, but I know you don't really want to get into that either, but...
No.
I'm just thinking of shows like that, or... yeah, I guess mainly that show. I guess that's a show that really exemplifies what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's fair. That's fair. I get it.
Well, thanks, Nick. I'm going to take another call.
All right, take it easy.
Thanks. John Krayok.
John Krayok. John Krayok. I've summoned you to the show.
I was doing a Game of Thrones voice, but then he kind of got like a Brooklyn guy.
I have summoned you to the show.
What is up, John? Is this a crank? All right, moving on. How about Eric Rao? Eric Rao.
Yo, hey.
Hey, Bob.
You know, thanks for picking up. I wasn't prepared to be answered on at all, but, you know, it's a pleasure to be here.
Always be prepared, folks. If you're going to call in, there's a chance, there's a good chance I'm picking up on you. So, no, but that aside, how can I help you today?
I have to mute the damn stream. Hold on. All right. You know, I don't know. I guess I'll do this. You know, I'm a young guy. I'm 27.
Where are you living?
I live in... Pardon?
Where do you live?
I live in Exton, Pennsylvania.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the city or the town, but go ahead.
You know, it's not far from where you grew up. So.
Okay.
You know, and I'm a single dad of a 7-year-old girl, and she wants me to get married, but I work all the time. You know, I'm like, I'm 27, I have a 7-year-old daughter, I got, like, got student loans, a mortgage, you know, so I work my butt off.
Your life is hard.
Yeah, you know.
Where do you work? What do you do for a living?
A software developer.
Software developer. Isn't all the software developed? Isn't it all been developed?
Believe it or not,
Skype.
It's not.
You got Skype. You got Mario Brothers. You got Microsoft Word. What kind of software do you develop?
We're like the TurboTax of life insurance.
Oh my God!
How about that?
That sounds so boring.
Dude, tell me about it. I was a math major, a couple computer science classes.
Are you just trying to at least make the interface more friendly for everybody to use? I feel like I was looking at, for instance, I keep ragging on Skype today, but we opened up Skype and it was just like immediately made you nauseous to see all these different windows and it was so counterintuitive.
Sure. I mean, I think that's every software developer's job, right? Streamline everything.
Please tell me, so what can we do about you getting married? Well, it's got to happen naturally, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, she really wants me to, but
she's only 7. She doesn't know shit.
She doesn't know shit.
Tell her to shut the fuck up. Be glad she's just. You better be happy for what you got. You better be glad you're not getting bombs rained down on you, and that there's not you're not eating out of a bag of rice. Show her videos of the poor children in Syria, and all the other war ravaged places in the world right now. You say you be happy with what you have. Shut up.
You be happy with one parent, right?
Yeah. Well, what happened to the mom? She out of the picture?
No, she's around. She's just like lackadaisical.
I think you should get back together with the wife.
That's definitely not happening.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, you know more about it than me, but I think you should try to make it work again.
No, that's not going to happen.
Well, you say that, but why don't you, in the new year, reassess, say...
She's engaged.
She's engaged. Well, maybe this guy can have a little accident or something. I don't know. I don't know how his brakes are. We don't know. We don't know. You know what I mean? You don't know. You don't know the quality of his brakes. But listen, I've been out of the dating scene for 10 years now, and I don't know what to do. How did I meet my wife? I went to wives.com.
No way.
No. You can find my wife. You can see the moment I met her is in the first season of Awesome Show in the Tim and Eric comedy seminar sketch. She's sitting in the front row. I met her on set that day, and we started dating, and there you go.
Wow. The rest is history, huh?
The rest is history. All right. Thanks, Eric. Happy holidays.
Ciao.
Ciao. I like that. Hey, Claire Ruddy's on the line. Claire Ruddy, Ruddy, Ruddy.
Hi.
Hey, Bubbles.
Hi, Tim. I had a question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just unfortunately got rejected from like my top college the other week.
From what? And your top college?
My top college, yes. I was wondering how important you think college is, or like, do you think it really matters where somebody goes to college?
Where was this? Do you mind saying what the school was?
Yeah, it was Northwestern University.
Oh dear, you must be not bright. Isn't that a pretty easy school to get into? I think my cousin went there. It didn't seem like any top school for him.
Yeah, it's really hard to get in.
Is it? Okay, fine. Oh, you know what's not? Northeastern. Northeastern's in Boston. It's like a shit school.
I've heard of it.
Anyway, so that's a hard school. What's your backup plan?
I think like DePaul or something. I mean, I live in Chicago, so somewhere around here.
Right. Well, so you're Chicago. Listen, yeah, definitely go to college if you can afford it. But I don't think it should be, you know, it's terrible that people that get burdened with all these student loans and maybe there'll be a fix for that. Probably not anymore. But it's a good time. What do you want to study? Do you have any idea? You probably are like, I don't even know what I want to do yet. I'm just in high school now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I applied to Northwestern as like a TV film major.
Right. Because it's fun. Who doesn't like TV?
That's, yeah, exactly.
Well, I feel you. It's fine. I am reading the comments, by the way, Joseph, when I can. I'm not, you know, I'm trying to stay engaged with my listeners, too, with my callers. Let me think. You should go to school because it's a good place to meet a bunch of people, learn how to be an adult a little bit. You know, when I was your age, I actually did have this conversation with my dad. I said, you know, maybe I should take a year off, you know, maybe I should. Yeah. And I didn't have a real answer of what I would even do. But he was like, no, you just go to college. Like, you don't, let's not fuck around here.
Right.
You'll have so, but people do it. I guess it's a popular thing to do now is to take time. And I always say this is just, there's no rush to do anything in life. So there is a feeling I think a lot of kids have, maybe even more now, is like we're missing out and we're not getting to where we want to be yet quick enough. And, it'll all work out. But I would, if you have the means and it's not too much of a burden on your family and on your life, go. And it doesn't matter if it's not the best school.
Mm-hmm.
Capiche? It's not, you don't have to go, you know, I guess it's a different thing. If you go to Harvard, you know, that puts you on or Yale or some like that top school. There's a chance that puts you on a track of success for the rest of your life.
Definitely.
But go to DePaul. You know who went to DePaul?
Who?
Jan C. Riley, I think.
Oh, you know what? Actually, yeah, my uncle went to high school with him.
Groovy, baby.
Well, anyway, thank you so much.
All right, take care. I'm going to have Dave Weigel call in a minute. Until he does, mention, I don't know, I still have you on the call. All right, take care. Bye, Claire. Good luck.
Bye.
Let us know how it all works out. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. I put this on Facebook last night. I did, if you're not subscribed to my SoundCloud account, this is big, my SoundCloud. I put up a song last night, a Christmas song that I wrote, and I just recorded it on my piano at home. It's a bit of a demo, I would say. It's a little sloppy. I'll put a little bit of it on while we wait for,
Merry Christmas, everybody.
This is while we wait for Dave Weigel to call in.
It's been a long, long time.
Did you hear this yet, Matt? Okay.
Since I said the words, well, I almost forgot them. They almost flew away like a bird. Now the bad man's gone and the gig is off. I can say it loud and proud. Well, Merry Christmas for the very first time this year. I say it with dignity, I say it without fear. I'll raise a glass of that style beer and say Merry Christmas, 'cause it's gonna be a very happy New Year.
that's all you got. So if you want to hear the rest of that song, it's now posted live up there on SoundCloud. I don't know how you, it's just my name, Tim Heidecker. It's a wonderful, this is not a commercial for SoundCloud. It's just honestly what I'm using right now to just, and I put up a bunch of all of demos as well. Oh, hold on. Here comes Dave. And I don't know. It's just, I like, some of these songs aren't, maybe I'm influenced by this whole movement of these mixtapes these rappers are putting out. They're not finished, right? They're not like, I don't know, I'm just trying every angle there is. So Dave Weigel should be popping up any minute now. Let's see if I can, call him. See, wouldn't it be nice? Oh, there we go. Call him. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tim. How's it going?
Look at this. It's finally working. We had you call in a few months ago, and then it all crapped out on us.
It did. I think that was my fault. I'll just take the blame.
Don't worry.
I was in an unfamiliar building with like a big concrete ceiling.
Right.
But it's going to be here now.
Good to be here with you, and happy holidays. And are you having some time off now? Are you working through the holidays?
I'm in Michigan just for the day with Keith Ellison, who's running for DNC chairman, and then I'm taking off. I'm working New Year's Eve, but not Christmas itself.
What are you doing on New Year's Eve that requires your talents? What are you covering?
They have to have warm bodies in place in case actual news happens.
Oh, okay.
I've done this before, and actual news has happened.
Oh, that's
so
fun.
I'm just doing that.
You're covering the news desk. Covering the news desk?
That's basically it.
Neat.
It sounds dramatic like that. It will be actually probably boring. I want to jinx it, because every time there's like 50-50 that actual news happens when we're doing that.
Right. Well, let's hope there's no news on New Year's Eve. You know, let's hope everything goes smooth. There's no terrorist attacks or anything of the sort. Let's hope it's a quiet night for Dave.
Yes.
So Dave,
all humanity.
Let's talk a little bit about your book that's now available for pre-order on Amazon. The title is, I want to get it right, so I want you to say it.
The Show That Never Ends.
Welcome, my friend, to the show that never ends. Step inside, yeah. Step inside, right?
You got it. Yeah, that's the reference. Not everyone gets the reference. They will.
Then it changes, then it modulates up. Right?
That Moog, just once he starts messing with the Moog and it starts
we were listening.
These tones just start attacking your the parts of your brain that like music. Yeah.
We were
that song I listened to that song a lot in a lot of different versions as I wrote this.
We were working on set the last week, and we kind of have a new thing where we have those Bluetooth speakers by the monitors, and so I'm kind of DJing throughout the day, putting on music and stuff. And I put on Lucky Man, right?
Ooh. Yeah.
And when that when that Moog comes in on that song, that's like really nuts. That it really feels like they got it out of the box, and what can this do?
Really, what happened?
Really?
There are a couple of Emerson, Lake and Palmer songs where Emerson just admits freely, "Oh yeah, that was I plugged it in and started doing that, so I just went with it." Like on their version of Hoedown, it's the same thing. It begins with this, and they started to replicate it in concert. They're like, "Well, that's cool."
Yeah.
And so but he was. I mean, that's one thing I want to get in the book is if you like electronic music, like it advanced dramatically because of these guys, because you know, Mellotron with the Beatles and the Moog with the LP and these other bands. Yeah,
it does feel like that. With Lucky Man, it does feel like it's so hot. And you know, the way they used to mix records back then was a very live kind of you know, you didn't get to like tinker with it for days. You know, you kind of just stuck with a mix. And the volume at which that Moog is at in that song too feels like if that was made now, there'd be somebody in that room going like, "Let's tuck that down a little bit. Let's like, can we tuck that into the mix a little more?" It's pretty funny, especially now with like really crisp, you know, digital versions. I grew up listening to that stuff, and it would always just be on the car. You know, it wouldn't be like crisp and clear where it's like you can really hear every little thing. And to hear it, like to hear the way that Moog is just, it really just kind of, it's hilarious. It's just hilarious. But so tell me,
go
ahead. Where's your interest in this subject come from? And, cause it's a very specific genre that I bet a lot of my listeners enjoy it. That's why I'm glad to have you on. Cause I think, people listening to the show are probably like some of them are into this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I keep finding closeted fans of this whenever I mention it. I'm surprised. People who need it explained in full detail and people who are like, oh, yeah, I love Jeff Rosenthal, admit it, that they didn't have anyone to admit it to. And so I bring this up. I was a generation behind the actual fans who saw this in person, listened to this in person in the 70s. But just as a kid who was listening to music and playing music in the 90s, I followed the trail, right? I'd listen to a band and then say, oh, they covered this, or oh, they Patriot, they interview, they say they like this. So Tool would mention how they like King Crimson,
right?
And what's that? And I followed that and I said, like, well, this is the wellspring. This stuff's amazing. Why? And some of it that was bad in interesting ways. I mean, yeah. the Yes is Tormato, where Chris Squire has a funk sound on his bass for everything, and they sing about the plight of the whale. Like, if it was, because to some of the music I like, I mean, like, some of my favorite Beach Boys stuff, I was listening at the same time, was just like Brian Wilson singing about vegetables and his, like, vitamin
routine. Foot health.
And I said, and it's like, this is amazing. These guys were like, and the fact that this music was so uncool, and not just uncool, but the official history of rock was that, there was rock. And then there was a dark age, and then the Ramones
punk
saved us
came
from
in,
it. And
right.
Yeah. So even just when it came to any kind of history, I was always interested. Like, well, what was happening in the dark age? Like, what were the monks doing during those 100 right. years when no culture was happening? And so this, I was like, well, this was people, like hundreds of thousands of people would fill an arena, or like they listen all night to this, and this was interesting. So I kept getting more and more. Not obsessed with it, but it was kind of like half of my intake for a long time. And I thought, well, punk and hip hop and everything that people are allowed to like has a lot of history. So let me write one of this.
That's great. You found a gap in the large the genre of rock books, which I love rock books. But there was a lot of technical proficiency with these guys, right? Like the musicianship was. Really a new, do you see it as like a new generation? It was a new generation of guys that grew up classically trained who then were like seeing rock as like the way to have a career in music. I mean,
some were classically trained, but not that many. A lot of these guys just played obsessively and dropped out of school. In the case of like Phil Collins as a drummer, he never learned to read music. He never had a lesson. He just got a drum set and played it a bunch and kind of fell into more ambitious music. Because that was the thing. It was just from 1968, especially starting in Britain, from the late 60s, early 70s, the natural progression was, well, we know these instruments. We have this equipment. We have these electronics. We have these studios. Like, how much further can we take this? It just wasn't. And there would be slices you could carve out for pop songs, but just... ambition was just natural. It was for a very short period of time. Again, like this, it was kind of fed by what the record companies were interested in. You had a lot of progressive labels like Harvest that were buying this stuff. You had
and it was radio it was a brand. This. It was a brand they knew how to put to. It was a brand they knew how to package. Like it was a certain kind of artwork. It was a certain audience, and
I, it was popular even after the critics decided that it was no longer. Right to be popular. I mean, I read for it. I did a ton of interviews. I interviewed Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and I can't believe two of them died this year.
I was going to make a joke. Are you going to see the? are you going to see the Palmer tour this summer?
just Palmer. Palmer's one man show. He actually does.
That'd be so sad. Just like coming to the Civic Arena, Palmer.
His current touring incarnation is like him just drums and then some musicians who play the other guys' parts and no vocals. He sells his art at the shows. Like the guys currently the happiest guys in progressive seem to be the ones who kind of broke away from it and did other stuff, like your Geddy Lees and your Robert Fripp's, what have you. Although he doesn't seem happy. He's the one of the guys who was perfectly content when it all blew up in the 70s.
Did you interview him, Robert Fripp?
he very politely declined and kind of directed me to stuff that answered the questions I had. Right. But I remember I found his, you know, I contacted an agent, I emailed him, and I had what I thought was a very convincing give me a shot email, which sometimes works, mostly yeah. works. And I said, like, here I want to ask about specifically
and let's admit it,
Starcraft period, and
he's not getting he's not getting tons of these emails, I'd imagine.
No, he does. Maybe. His management warned me. He gets some requests and he turns down like 95% of them. He did a documentary interview for David Bowie a couple years ago. He did the cover of the Wire magazine only because they gave him the cover. But I emailed him. I very carefully said, there are these specific things you haven't talked much about in the press. I want to do that. Ask about this and this and this and this. And I said, this isn't going to be one of those, what was it like being in a band, you know, right. lazy interviews. And he emails me back and it's just, dear David, what was it like being in a band? In a word, dreadful.
Just like, geez, what an asshole.
Very politely explains that he won't talk to me.
Right. Oh, it must have been so hard for you, Fripp. Fuck him, Fripp. It's dreadful. Well, what would you rather be doing? Down in the coal mines up in wherever you're from? Northern England?
He was from the coast. That was what I was trying to
fishing. You're gonna be out on a fishing boat.
Accent. Yeah.
You want to be on a fishing boat, getting the day's supply of fish and chips for your little town. It was dreadful. Why? He just played guitar with a bunch of cool guys. Made a shitload of money. Well,
but, so who I didn't find him. It's his time. Whatever. But, I know. Yeah. He actually pointed me to like these long oral interviews he'd done in the. Yeah,
I don't like that. I don't like that term. Oral interviews.
It was less, not oral. You know what I mean? Like long. Yeah. They weren't transcribed, right. But it was interesting. And those answered my questions. I mean, the research was fun. I read probably every music magazine that was published for about 20 years.
What was the name of the
that ever interviewed these guys?
What was there a prog? You just, I mean, you might have just mentioned it. And I zoned out. There was a prog magazine. Specific
there actually prog? Is currently kind of a revivalist prog magazine, but it might be ending because the company is going to receivership.
I can't understand that, Dave, in this current climate. Why would that be happening to this magazine?
It lasted pretty long for a print magazine.
What is what is this current status? Because there's a band that drives me nuts, and I've watched videos of these guys, and they seem to be the current mantle holders of the term prog rock is this band Spock's Beard.
Yeah. they're a pretty niche band, and you'll see them at some of the festivals that happen, a couple of which I went to the cover of the book. They, you know, no, as you well know, there's very little music that's popular and that bands can get by selling records right now.
Right.
So they're kind of, in a way, the field's been leveled a bit. But the guys from Dream Theater can sell out things. I've seen them do smaller shows. It's like an intense fan base that will buy everything, which is decent to have. But there's no anticipation of ever being like a world striding musical trend anymore. Right. Even Steve Wilson from Porcupine Tree was one of my favorite people to talk to because he was explicit. He's just like it's what he writes in, but he just thinks that it's totally a dead genre.
Yeah.
Prog metal is kind of new, but that's even petered out. And he was very almost nihilistic about this being a dynamic thing. He just thought it was good. He just liked playing it the same way, you know.
Well, I think it's probably a
Sibelius really... and Chopin are not writing anything new, but people still like playing them.
Yeah, it is a fun genre to play if you're proficient in that instrument, or, you know. It's a little masturbatory, right? That's sort of the criticism of it. It's a little like, it's a little more about the musician than it is about the audience. But, that's probably not true for a lot of it. I'm generalizing, but that's some of the criticism of that kind of music is like, it's a little one way. So it's not, and it's also a little, not very personal. It's not like the songs aren't coming from like, it's not so much of a self-expression as a, I don't know. I'm just talking out loud. I haven't really thought about it too much.
No, that's some of the criticism. They're aware of that. It's even guys I talked to who admitted they only in the 80s when they kind of sold out, they start writing heart-filled, honest songs. Right. And they just kind of a great answer why they didn't before. I remember John Wetton, who was in King Crimson, then joined Asia. He was talking about Heat of the Moment, that was inspired by him listening to Joni Mitchell and thinking, oh, wow. Like, oh, you can write songs about emotion. So she came out with like River and Carrie, and, right. and he came out with Heat of a Moment. Like, this is my statement.
That's
and
hilarious.
I mean, like, none of these guys are all smart. And they know what they're doing. Like, he was trying to write a big pop song, but he was like, what if I break away from just, you know, very mystical lyrics that right. are hard to connect to? What if I just sing about these relationships I have?
There's only wizards you can talk about before you've just, I mean, Spinal Tap obviously nailed it with Stonehenge, right? That's the best example yeah. of.
And that's one thing that was fun. Some of the managers I talked to had consulted on Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
They took their ELP and Yes experiences. Yes had, you know, shows where their dramatic entrance was screwed up because people moved the tube they would come through to get
right.
on stage.
Well,
which is exactly the Hello Cleveland yeah. joke. Yeah.
Well, also and also the pods that they can't get out of, right? Or that
yes, wasn't... that was actually the reference. Yeah.
There's a great YouTube video, and I can't find it anymore, but it's those guys discussing their costumes and their wardrobe in the studio. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? It's yeah. the best. I mean, it's like an hour of them. If I'm going to wear silver, won't that distract from you? And it's they're so sincere and so into their own bullshit. It's the best.
I gotta miss that. Like I whenever I see a band that's just you know, they have the same chords as everyone else, and they have cool T-shirts and jeans, and there's no show.
No, I know. I dread going,
it was great when you would.
I really dread going to see. I dread going to see live music because there comes a point in the show where you're like, what am I watching? Like, I mean, say a band like Wilco, who I like Wilco quite a bit, you know, and I don't mean to single them out, but like the kind of music I like doesn't really often translate to a good live show because it is just a bunch of guys in jeans and flannel shirts and T-shirts wanking it on stage, playing songs pretty close to the way you heard them on the record. And
yeah, and this is always supposed to be different. Progressive was not even supposed to be, and like they didn't think they were. Sometimes they knew they were being pretentious, but it was just this was how you entertained. Like this is how you entertained yourself and the audience. And they still have versions of those stage shows, but back when ELP would have an entire quadraphonic setup and Persian rug that they were standing on and right. stuff. Like yeah. they wanted you to feel like you bought an experience.
And there's those great videos of Emerson, Lake and Palmer where he would just bash the shit out of his keyboard, right?
Yeah.
Was organ?
With a knife.
With a knife, yeah.
He would stab the hand with a knife and throw it around, yeah.
It's kind of punk. It's kind of like super aggressive and dangerous. It's very strange. I don't know what they would do with those organs every night. You know, like a
no. Was,
what yeah, what would they was, do? You're was, the expert.
How they would tune them up? You mean?
Well, I mean, when he would stab this organ with a knife, would it be? Would they have to repair the organ?
Yeah, they just have to fix it. I mean, he did the damage to it. Basically, it wasn't even damage as much as he would stick the knife so that the knife was suppressing
okay.
keys, and then they would take it out and have to tidy up a little bit, but he didn't like destroy the machine every night. He just beat it up to the extent he knew you could beat it up and come back.
Right.
And it looked awesome. I mean, it does look awesome.
Look awesome. Look at
even
how do
more
you
dramatic version of
what would somebody
guitar,
yeah. what would our listeners YouTube Google to find that clip? What do you think? Emerson Lake Palmer live?
I'd say destroy? ELP or Keith Emerson Hammond organ. I think a performance, especially when he was with the Nice, is when he started that.
Oh, okay.
So you probably can find a performance of like America or Rondo where he starts doing that. And it's really just end of show or even kind of mid show antics. Like good. There's a lot of there's actually a good number of ELP concerts on YouTube. And I kind of watched some because I couldn't see them live.
Sure.
He had a good sense of when to pull that out.
Right.
When to pull out that trick. Yeah.
All right, Dave, I better go.
Sure.
We got to get, you know, it is about the listeners, folks. It's about the listeners. It's been a wonderful chat with you, but I want to be able to take some calls before we sign off for the year. And thank you for making this happen. Everybody go and get Dave's book on Amazon at this point is really your best bet.
Yeah.
And name the book again.
It's the Show That Never Ends.
The Show That Never Ends. Sort of an ironic title, as the show, in a way, did end for that. that speaking of irony, we were talking about irony earlier. Well done, Dave.
Thanks very much. It's been actually being out.
I know the book's been a passion project for years now for you, and I can't imagine what it's like to write a book at the same time doing what you do every day, which is on the ground reporter running around covering this crazy year. And incredible that you're able to do all these things at once.
It both kept me balanced, and it also made the book late by a year. But now it's done. So
I believe I deserve a signed copy. I mean,
totally.
I don't know if that's going to be in the cards for me, but I do go on record as saying I believe I deserve it. And it's up to you. You take your time with that decision. If you don't, if you don't feel that's ethical or appropriate, I respect your decision on that. I do believe in my heart I deserve a signed copy. So whatever
we'll
want to
consider
do.
That.
Okay. Yeah, just consider it.
All right.
reflect on that. All right, Dave. Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks. Happy holidays, you guys.
You too. Bye. The great Dave Weigel, fine man, wonderful, intrepid reporter. Read his work on the Washington Post and buy his book. Why was all the angry emotions about Luke Booth?
Hey, Tim, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you? Sorry if that interview was long.
No, dude, it was great. I liked it. I'm a big fan of all that kind of music, you know?
Great.
Hey, I'm actually calling in from a little bit outside your hometown, and I had two questions about it. One, you're not really playing shows around here, and I'd love to see, you know, because, like, In Glendale was fantastic. I have that on vinyl upstairs in my room.
Okay.
And all your other stuff. I was wondering why you haven't gone over to the East Coast.
Here's the problem. I did the West Coast tour, and it was a 10-piece band. So okay. It's 10 people plus a road manager guy. And it worked on the West Coast because we could get a van and drive up the coast with all the gear. And
gotcha.
when you look into doing a East Coast tour, you got a couple options. One, fly there. Well, that starts to get a little expensive for 12 people.
Yeah.
Or drive there. And then that gets to be like, well, I'm driving 3 days to get 4 days to get to a show. And, so it's a frustrating, I'm not capable right now of playing rooms that are big enough where it becomes financially, acceptable to do that, you know, for where everyone's going to get paid for their time. But I think the longer I wait, the more interest there'll be, perhaps, and we can, I don't know, eventually would love to do it. And maybe there's a version of the show that I do that's not the 10 people, you know, it's not as many people. I could scale back.
Yeah.
We're looking into it. I mean, and I don't want to be away from home right now.
That's true. You just got a kid, right?
Yeah.
How's that?
Good.
It's a boy, right?
It's a boy.
Any difference? Because your first one was a girl.
A boy has a penis.
Boy has that is a penis.
Super long too. It's like the length of my index finger.
I don't believe that. Don't believe that. another question though. You kind of left this town. And
just like Springsteen, right?
Yes, just like him. I'm wondering what you think of the old Pennsylvania, your old stomping ground.
Well, you know, I it's
honesty here, Tim.
Honesty always on office hours. Always honest on office hours.
Office hours.
I feel, you know, it's funny. I was back in Allentown last year and around fall, and it was beautiful, gorgeous, gorgeous. Pastoral. There's a strong agriculture base there. There's farms not far out of the city. You know, there's some history there. There's a river running through the city. It has the potential, I believe, to be a great town. It's close to New York. It's close to Philly, right?
Yeah.
And I was driving around. I'm like, this kind of, in a way, reminds me at least of, you know, like Portland, like the size of Portland or something, you know, kind of. It's not a huge town, small. It's got a lot of nature in it, a lot of parks. But it hasn't, the culture isn't there. The food isn't there. The people aren't there. The, you know what I mean? The thing that makes a city or a town kind of desirable as sort of a artist, I don't know, and like what makes Portland, what's nice about Portland is you go up to Portland, there's just all kinds of great food, and it's all about food, isn't it? It's all. But there's that Pennsylvania Dutch crabby kind of, you know, fat.
Grumpy. I mean, I work at a cafe. I hear these people all day. I mean, they come in, they just.
You don't want to be around them.
No,
it's like, get me the fuck out of this place. Everyone's a goddamn bummer.
Yes.
Everyone's pissed.
You're speaking my mind.
It sucks. The whole East Coast, by the way, is that way.
It's
New York, everyone's got a fucking snarled look, like, fuck everybody. Yeah, fuck
dude,
you.
Yeah. I was just in New York the other day picking up my friend from NYU.
Boston. Fucking Boston. Fucking New York.
Tim, I'm sick of these towns.
The energy's got to change out there. And I get it, because it's, you know, this time of year, it's like fucking cold and rainy and the sun don't shine. When I moved out to California, within a month or so, I was going to, you know, I went to the grocery store and the checkout lady, I get some eggs, I get some groceries. She'd get this big smile on her face. She couldn't be nicer. She's like, did you find everything? And how are you doing today? Feeling good? You know, it was so goddamn pleasant.
Yeah, that's Glendale. You're talking?
It was, at the time, it was just like, you know, L.A. or something. Look at all these frowny face, you fucking pussies. Fuck off.
Screw them. It's just you and me right now, Tim.
It's about me and you.
Yes.
The attitude has to change in these towns because I go back to Allentown. These guys come in. They weigh 500 pounds. They fucking waddle into some diner. And they look like, you know, look like they just ate shit. Their face is all...
Can't fit in the booth. It's
like they just sucked on a lemon. They just sucked on a lemon. Hey, look at the fucking, look at the world out there, Grace. Yeah, you know, just not like it used to be. Ain't like it used to be.
And what does that even mean? What does that even mean? It's not like what it used to be. Because I feel like we are on a perpetual, well, I mean, not now with our new election, but I just feel like things have just progressively gotten better since the 60s.
I don't know about all them computers. I don't know. I don't trust them there, Grace. I don't know. I just rather it be how it was. And I get a couple of eggs and I don't have to have no fancy coffee, you know. I don't need it. Don't eat it. I like Dunkin' Donuts, and that's as far as I go there, you know. And they had this black guy serving us now. And where'd he come from? These Mexicans coming, taking all jobs. These fucking dimwits.
Tim, I think you...
Let them all die from the scrapple they shoved down their mouth.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Tim, it was nice talking to you.
Yes, right. Luke, happy holidays. And hey, happy holidays to all my wonderful relatives who are still living with us.
Dude, I hope to see you live soon or something, because I love what you're doing right now. You're just getting better and better every year.
Every year it gets better. What's it called? Exponentially.
Yes, exponential.
Grazie. Math. See you, Luke. Let's take Avi real quick. Avi.
Every year.
Avi Azore, Avi Azore.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey,
what?
Big fan.
And I'm riled up.
I'm actually from New York.
Ooh, it's New York. Hey, where you from? Brooklyn, Bronx, huh?
Queens.
Ooh, Queens. Ah, that's the best. You got the fucking Queens Airport. Fucking JFK and this and that. Fucking Queens and this and that. And what's it called there with the Greek town? Astoria. Astoria, that's where everybody goes, eh?
I actually moved to West Hempstead like 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. West Hempstead there. That's out by Brooklyn, a little bit of that.
Well, I am a huge film fan. I've actually been to the movie theater 200 times this year.
Ooh, yeah. Where you going down there? West Hempstead Cinemas?
No, New York City.
All right. Oh, yeah, like down there, Angelica Film Center, whatnot. Yeah. Sunshine Theater. You doing the Sunshine Theater?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sunshine, what Angelica, see. All the good movie theaters, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So what do you want to talk about? Movies there?
No, I actually want to talk about Decker.
All right. Yeah, okay. I'll talk about Decker for a little bit.
Yeah. So I love how your show is the perfect balance of intentionally not putting effort in, but not just phoning it in. What goes into the look of a show like Decker, making it look the way it does?
Well, all right. I'm going to say goodbye to Tony from Queens. Okay. Tony, thanks for coming by. You know, I mean, this and that. I like saying this and that.
Yeah. I had a guy I worked with. I lived in New York. I worked with this guy who's from Long Island. From Staten Island.
Ooh, beep bop. He used to remember that, man.
He used to come in and be like, "Well, fucking bus was late this morning. You go, fucking run into the bus. I'm going beep bop. I'm going to be late. Nah."
I get on the ferry, this and that. The fucking guy tells me fucking need another token with this and that. I go, beep bop, what the hell's going on with this guy, right?
Honestly, I really just like want to get to LA as soon as possible.
I went to, I came out to LA with this guy for, I was working for this video game company, longer version of that story, but we had to stay in a hotel together, room together with this guy. And he would get up real early and start ironing his jeans. And then and then he's like, "What do you want to do? You want to go out and drive around, whatnot?" He goes, "Let's drive around." So we're driving around L.A. Look at these, and he's just looking at gas prices. The guy was obsessed with looking at gas prices. He'd drive around, "Oh, fucking $3 for gas! Beep bop, what the? What are they paying $3 a gallon for this place?" And then this is my favorite thing. We're listening to the radio, and this was like 15 years ago. And they just started running these William Shatner Priceline commercials. Remember Priceline?
Yeah.
And it was William Shatner was the spokesman. So it was like William Shatner was doing all these radio ads. He goes, beep bop. He goes, "Fucking William Shatner, fucking sellout."
Yeah.
I'm like, sellout? I mean, one was like, what is he, Lou Reed? What is he? It's not like a most artistically, you know, it's not like, it's just William Shatner. I don't think, like, guy's getting a job doing a commercial. I wouldn't describe it as fucking beep bop. This guy fucking sell out. The last time I ever watched any of his shit.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Listen, you asked a question about Decker.
Yeah, like the look.
Yes. Well, here it is. I think the key to success is there are super talented, capable people that work on the show. Eric Natornicola is our director. You see his name in the credits. We have great art department, great DPs, great camera people. So the idea is sort of like, I've managed to hire competent people to make the show. And they're making it under protest. You know, they're sort of like, I'm going to do my best. Here, because I like my job, and I like my craft. I care about my craft. So, anyways, that's sort of the theory. And then Greg and I get in there and basically subvert that and sabotage that and ruin it. So we don't want to look at something that just looks like crap, you know, that looks just unwatchable and sounds bad. And, you know, we want there to be like, because you're going to spend a little bit of time with it. You want to be able to see it and get sucked in a little bit with the drama and everything. So thank you for noticing that. I think that gets overlooked. And salute to all the people that work on the show.
Yeah. Well, nice talking to you. This one guy who's commenting wants you to hang up on me. So
he's a prick. John Lockrance can go to fucking hell. He goes onto this chat board and he goes, "You're fine. There's no. First of all, you inspired me to basically tell a great story about
the
guy I used to work with, and you got some real answers about the process, and that's what people come here looking for every single time they come and join us. So wonderful to hear from you.
You basically summed up what I hate about Trump supporters in 66 minutes, basically.
Yes. Perfect. Anything else?
Obvious.
I do want to run, so I'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Happy holidays. Ooh, we got Joe Cox here. Joey Cox! Joey Cox in
Hello?
His mouth. Joey
Hello?
Cox.
Hello, is this Tim Heidecker?
This is Tim Heidecker. Joey Cox in his mouth.
Yes, that's my name.
How can I help you?
So you meet I have a question for you about sort of the golden era of Tim and Eric. Mm. And I was wondering, it seems maybe a little bit rude but or personal, but how much did it cost to produce a single episode of that show?
Awesome Show?
Yep, The Awesome Show. Great job.
I don't know. I don't remember the number. It wasn't a lot. It was obviously not a lot. It was, you know.
Right.
I think you could probably make 4 episodes of Awesome Show for the price of 1 Bedtime Stories, maybe.
Right. And is that just because you're using physical sets and stuff for Bedtime Stories, right?
Yeah, it was. It's just it takes longer to make the substantially longer. Just the cameras are higher quality, so that requires more lighting and more careful blocking and more just a different process than just kind of going down to our little basement studio and right. throwing up a green screen. And the weird thing about Awesome Show is we were kind of always in production, and we had this weird thing where there'd be days where we would just shoot for an hour, and there'd be days where we'd shoot for like 12 hours. But it was like a kind of just a rolling schedule that kind of went through most of the year when we were working on it, because we didn't have anything else going on. Really, it was kind of the only thing we were doing. Mm-hmm. And everybody was figuring it out for the first time. Everybody working on the show had never made anything like that. So
as episodes came together, was that mostly in post-production, or was there sort of a narrative string you knew you wanted in each episode that kind of came out?
We were I would say that we had scripts. The sketches were written for those episodes. They were kind of, but they were under the impression that they would be futzed with tremendously in post. So nothing was sacred, and there wasn't a strict adherence to any script. But they were largely like, we didn't just go out and shoot a bunch of crap and then put together episodes. We kind of went one thing at one episode at a time. And then, you know, sometimes because of all the guests we'd have, one of the great things was being able to have the flexibility of, oh, if we want, you know, Jeff Goldblum or something, well, he's not available till next month, and we can kind of move things around. And, you know, it was very fluid and made, and because it was small, and it was very flexible and mobile to adjust to the, you know, situation.
And I guess as you completed seasons of this, were episodes being shown as you were working on episodes for that same season, or did you just sort of complete them in batch?
I believe we would generally finish a season before it aired because of the that might not be the case in all seasons. We might have been finishing stuff while it was airing, but it takes a little while to finish an episode, you know, all the sound mixing and little finishing touches that get put on it. Generally, you don't want to get that. You don't want to run up against an air date too close. It's got to go through the legal, and it's got to be reviewed and all that kind of stuff. So you generally want to have a good big gap between when you finish and when it airs.
Right. I know I've or at least read and saw things about how South Park Studios sort of
They've got a different system.
They're always running up against those deadlines.
Right. But they have the infrastructure and the manpower and the money to make that possible. I don't think we had the capabilities to do that. We were just kind of such a small operation that we were not the first in line to get reviewed or to get, you know, approved and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it all worked out.
Do you think that if you made more Awesome Show today, that you would have that clout or that infrastructure that you could, you know, sort of do this edit as you shoot?
It would be a different experience for sure. There would be more, there'd just be frankly more money to have a bigger staff, bigger people, more people doing. So you have everyone doing a little bit less. I mean, the amount of work everybody had to do on that show, because you had producers that were just doing all the casting themselves. There wasn't a big infrastructure to the show, which probably made it either great for you or somebody that hates it, more hateful. Hateable. But that was the style of the show. And it would be the weird thing about going back to it would be to sort of artificially create that environment, because the environment that we had to make that show was just the environment we had. It was
right. Certainly like Bedtime Stories definitely uses, you know, what tools you have now that you may not have had back then.
Exactly.
As far as
so, the last thing you want to do is start ingenuously creating a environment or a vibe because of some to replicate something you had done in the past, you know. But there are certain jokes that just work better because it's made like a local commercial or is on green screen or something, you know. So right. It should be idea based, but yeah. So that's all I got to say about that.
Great. Awesome.
Thanks, Joe, for the great question. Happy holidays. Yep. No one's taken my challenge, by the way, Matt, of caroling the Hot Puppy song. So I'm going to just start asking people to do it. Sean?
Yeah?
I need you to mute your stream. You're the first caller that I'm going to challenge to carol the Hot Puppy theme song.
Jokes that just okay.
So the floor is yours.
I actually missed the question, what you just said, because there was like the sound from the other stream. I was just panicking to turn it off.
You know the Office Hours theme song, Hot Puppy?
Yeah.
So if you were to go out Christmas caroling,
yeah.
and on your set list was Hot Puppy, let's hear what that would be.
Hot Puppy? I don't know the theme song. Can I just freestyle the theme song?
You are such a bullshitter. I asked you if you knew it. You said no.
No, I don't know the theme song.
All right, I'm going to play it for you.
Okay.
Well, now I lost my place. Ah, you suck!
I'm sorry.
You suck! Oh, playlist, hold on. Here you go. Everybody, you're going to have to carol, Christmas carol, through the... Hot Puppy theme song. That's all you're getting.
Huh?
The floor is yours. Carol away.
Hot Puppy. Hot Puppy, so good. I want to make more puppies.
No. That's not how you do it. All right. Do you have a question, Sean?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
It's a quick one. I was wondering, like, I've seen you take more serious roles, like acting wise. Yeah. I was wondering what your approach is to that thing that you want to pursue.
The approach is try to help the director and the whoever's making it to make the thing they want to make as good as it can be. Here's the secret. The dirty little secret is those dramas, those serious roles are the easiest things you could ever do.
Really?
Well, most of the time they're casting you because they like you or... They're right for the part, you know. Whereas Woody Allen or somebody like that says like casting is 90% of the job of acting, because if you cast the right person, all they have to do is try to be some version of themselves that feels real and honest, and you know, be connected to the part. And so that's really my approach. Try to have my lines memorized and. Try to have fun and take it seriously to some degree.
Okay.
It's fun to, you know, it's just fun to work and meet and work with other people. And I don't get too, like, I'm not, like, having lots of thoughts about whether this is right for me. Or as far as, I mean, I would if it's in terms of the character, but I'm not super, I'm not super picky. Like, it's just, I don't feel like I have much ownership over these movies, you know, that I'm in just as an actor. So I'll be happy to do it as an actor. I just like, cause you can't really control how anything's going to come out. So might as well just do it. And if it's good, it'll be received well. If it's not, I think people realize that shit doesn't work all the time.
Cool.
Thanks. Sean Boy. Let's keep, there's lots of wonderful calls coming in. Blake? Blake?
Yes.
What? The Facebook stream. Oh, I think try again now, because now the video feels like it's good. Oh, can anyone hear me out there? Can someone hear me? Can I get confirmation that people can hear me? I'm getting thumbs up. Thumbs up, thumbs up. Working. Okay, we're back. You know, you can't get through an office hours without some kind of technical problem. So here's what I'm going to do is try to call Kalu again. Nope, that's not what I want to do.
Don't you fret.
How's it going there, Blake?
Going pretty good. I'm calling out of Austin, but great. It's kind of cold.
Hey, Kalu. I'm trying Kalu now. She's not answering. Oh, there she is. Hey, C.
Hi.
Okay. Let's just check in one more time that everybody can hear everybody here. So, Matt, can you do another test? Can we hear Kalu? Kalu, identify yourself and where you're from.
Hi, it's Kalu Henry here.
Where are you calling in from?
Calling in from Hudson, New York.
Great. Hudson, New York, the hot spot.
We're hicksters. We're no longer hipsters because we left Brooklyn.
Ooh, I like that, hicksters.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is the time of year when I think of the holidays. I think of you because of all the wonderful Christmas days we've spent together as children. And sadly, we don't see each other quite as much as we used to. But,
I know.
It is a shame that the distance has become so challenging.
But I feel close to you in spirit all the time.
But man, oh man, I'll tell you what. Your Christmas day at your mom's house, there's nothing like it, by the way. So Kalu's got a mother who's Italian. Jewish, right? She's got the whole.
Yep.
She's a cook. She makes all these beautiful meals, and the day would be just filled with one meal after the next. You get the eggplant parmesan coming out. You get the sausage and peppers.
Yep.
You get the big old roast turkey cut up for sandwiches with great baked bread from the bakery. And what else?
We usually had some pasta.
Like a baked ziti and this and that.
A baked ziti. I have a recipe for that, you know.
In your book.
I do.
All right. Well, let's get a little less heavy-handed on the plug of the book.
Okay.
Let's try to make this as organic. And is there anything organic in the book? Is it an organic cookbook?
It's all organic. All organic.
And the book is printed on pasta.
Yeah, it's just pasta.
So, and the work and the prep that goes into that Christmas Day celebration is tremendous. Tell us about that dessert, that the log cake, the log. What is the?
Oh yes, Bûche de Noël.
Ooh, the Bûche de Noël.
It's a lot of chocolate.
Yeah.
And some raspberry jam. It's delicious. It looks like a log. It's log cake.
Log cake. And are you celebrating? What's gonna be your Christmas like this year?
So on Christmas Eve, we're gonna go to Uncle Michael's.
And you do what? That's a fun thing too. What do you do there?
Feast of the Seven Fishes. So all different sorts of dishes throughout the day. We're gonna do lobster ravioli this year. I just heard, which is gonna be really fun. And we're going to do some frito misto and stuffed peppers. And then on Christmas Day, we have the eggplant parmesan.
Let me ask my audience, are you guys getting hungry out there? Are you guys starting to mouth water? Let me see them. Let me see them thumbs up and them tongues wagging out.
What are you guys making for Christmas? Do you know?
No, I don't know, actually. I haven't planned it yet. We're going to go to a friend's house for the day.
Oh, nice.
So, anyways. So the book is... tell us what the book is about. It's a cookbook, a recipe book, but it's... well, go ahead.
So yeah, it is a cookbook. There's 100 pasta recipes. And the idea is that if you shop seasonally and you have a well-stocked pantry, then a pasta dinner is no more than a boiling pot of water away.
I like that. I like the way you put that.
Thank you. So it's supposed to be easy and fun and approachable. And the whole takeaway is that, you know, you don't, it's more of a mindset than actually, you know, having to follow recipes step by step. It's really just sort of figuring out what works well together and kind of just letting your spirit be your guide.
I like that. And, you know, so you're encouraged to keep some staples in the house at all time, right?
Correct.
And then it's easy because I get home at night and my wife gets home at night. People come home and they're like, I don't know what to make. What have we eaten lately? What is the, and then it just becomes very stressful. But if you have right. this in your back pocket, you put out the book, you're like, well, I got some nuts. I got some turkey. I got some.
Yep. Absolutely. You got it. I like that idea, actually. Maybe we should come up with a recipe.
You know what I bought this morning on Amazon? Because I got suckered in on some video. It was one of these sous vides.
Oh, no way. You did not.
I did.
That's cool. You should sous vide for Christmas.
I might. I might do that. Did you hear about this, Matt? I got a sous vide. One of these things you stick in the water and it cooks your food perfectly every time.
Yeah, I've never actually done it.
They talk about it like it's this, you know, miracle device. I'm sure it won't
work.
I'm sure it won't work for me.
No, I think it'll work. You know I'm always your 911.
It's true.
For your cooking questions.
All right. Well,
all right.
I love you more than
I love you so much.
More than anybody in the world except my children and my wife and my my parents and some other friends of mine.
Okay, well, I love you the same.
Yes. We'll talk privately. I know we have much catching up to do and much to go over. Love
yes,
you
we do.
And bye.
I love you too. Thanks for having me on.
Back pocket pasta from Kalu Henry.
I love
first cousin. And she loves it. Now, Blake, you're so patient.
Thank you.
Please proceed with your question.
Okay. I just have to say, I think you're doing a great job standing up for Vic in this age of post-fact when anybody can say anything and throw spears at somebody online and get people all riled up. So thank you for that.
I have to support Vic because he's my boy. I mean...
Yeah.
He's my protege. But what's your question?
I guess kind of along the same lines as, you know, however you found Vic and his work resonated with you. And it's crazy that Vine is now, I guess it's going away. Do you see, you know, obviously you're doing your show on Facebook Live. Do you see the sort of opening of new kinds of, I guess if you want to call it social media or interactive media as fertile ground for doing these comedy experiments or real life interaction experiments? I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I don't either. I kind of do.
Yeah.
Do your hot puppy, Carol.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you how I would do it, but go ahead.
Could I get a... Christmas. Merry Christmas.
That's beautiful. Thanks, Blake. I think the youth will continue to embrace the...
I'm sorry.
I think the youth, the younger folks will use the medium at their disposal that they're most comfortable with.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. Can you hear me? All right. Bye, Blake. Been on the line for about an hour. Eric Ashbrook. Hello. Eric, are you on the line?
Hello.
Hello, Eric. Hello. How are you? Eric Ashbrook.
Hot puppy. Hey, Tim. How's it going?
Hot puppy.
Tim, we shook hands at Newport Music Hall in November 2010. I don't know if you remember me.
Newport Music Hall, where is that?
Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, I remember you.
You remember me? Christmas
yeah,
Tour?
Of course.
No way.
No. Oh, well, Columbus, Ohio is a notable show because we were, our half of our band, were we playing with the Puss
Riot Bang Gang?
Half of our band got sick.
Yeah, they couldn't play that show. So it was the Crimbus tour. Yeah.
We had to end up just like, we did our first half of the show, and then the second half, we just showed a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But Neil Hamburger
said,
was there.
Yeah, I said, well, listen, let's also, after the show, we'll do like a full, we'll be here all night. You can, you know, shake hands, take pictures and everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
People were upset, but there's not, I mean, so let me give you a backstory there. The night before was the show in Chicago, and we did two shows in one night, and it was the winter, it was cold, and we were pretty road sick of the road by then, but our bass player Mark Livengood wasn't feeling too well before the show started. He was like, oh man, I don't know if I eat something weird, you know.
And, too much gumbo.
Who knows? Too much gumbo. And so we go out and we're doing the show, and he's looking like pale. He's looking bad. And he's playing bass and he's kind of like getting through it. But in the middle of one of the songs, he goes to the side of the stage and fully vomits into a garbage can that's there. So like violently, and then, but still playing. And he keeps playing. I get a whiff of this vomit on stage. I'm like, oh my God, the fuck is happening? Then like a couple minutes later, he's disappeared because he's now run downstairs to violently diarrhea in the shitty backstage, comes back, vomits again. And it was horrible. So he goes back. We're like, get him back to the hotel. Let's figure out what we're going to do here. He goes back to the hotel. He's rooming with the keyboard player, Davin Wood, who's on tour with us. So Davin's got to go back to this room where this violently ill man is. Now, you know what happens there. By the next morning, they're both sick. Mark has to go to the hospital because, like, he passes out from dehydration or whatever and is so ill. We have to have this little band meeting or, you know, group meeting that morning in Chicago and say, what are we going to do? And we can't, like, I can't get near, we, like, Eric and I were deathly afraid to get near these guys because we figured we're going to get the illness. I was, you know, everyone's having that like feeling of, is it coming? Is it like, I just burped. Is this the beginning? But nobody else got sick, but we said, why don't you guys stay in this hotel for an extra night? Just get better. You'll skip Columbus and you'll fly to the next town, whatever that is, Cleveland or something. And, you'll see if you feel, hopefully you'll be better by then. And they were, but we had to sacrifice Columbus on that. I mean, we just had to, couldn't do the band.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't feel cheated. I still thought it was a great show.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question was, you know, you're talking to someone earlier about, you know, they're talking about college and everything that entails, and I'm graduating in May, and I've got an interest in getting into, you know, film animation, something along those lines. And I guess my advice to you would be, what do you think is
your advice to me?
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke.
I don't need your advice.
I know you don't need my advice, Tim.
What?
But what would your advice be to somebody who's, you know, going to be in the real world here pretty soon? And I'm, you know, right now I'm trying to self-produce a little cartoon that I've made, and like, so if I end up with something that I'm, you know, proud of, what do you think is the first step to kind of getting a foot in the door?
Well, I think you got to put it online and hopefully, you know, spread it at least amongst your friends and get some feedback from them, and maybe they'll pass it along and it'll find an audience. You can always send it to the Office Hours audience. That's a bunch of, you know, post it here or post it somewhere if you think it's good, and send it to me. Aside from that, you know, it's good that you're self-producing. I have a lot of people that call in and just say, well, I want to be doing what you do, but I don't really know. I don't have any ideas or.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many things out there now, like, you know, first of the internet, it's so saturated that it's kind of hard to, you know, if you put a lot of time into making something, it's just like, well, is it going to be my friends and family that see it? Is it going to get anywhere? So
right.
I know there's no like easy answer to this question. It's just
it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of years generally, unless it's a fluke or you're just like, you know, super gifted and lucky and stuff. But
yeah,
you know, just keep pursuing it and keep making stuff, and everything you make, you'll learn something about the process, and you know, put it out there. There's no easy answer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll throw a link in the comments to have a little intro for us. So
okay,
maybe the office hours.
Why not?
Crowd would like it. Why not, Tim?
I want this office hours crowd, and it's not huge. It's not a big crowd. I don't know. There's not even that many people listening right now, but the podcast does well. People like listening to that.
Oh yeah.
But I want it to be a creative, supportive space.
Oh yeah. This is, you know, for a long time Tim and Eric fan, this is awesome to be able to listen every week and, you know, hear honest feedback to fans and things like that. So
why not? Right.
Keep doing you, Tim. You're
all
the
right.
Man.
Thanks, Eric.
Absolutely.
Almost done with the show today. Let me take another couple of calls. Brandon.
Awesome. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Brandon.
Hey, calling from Brooklyn.
Beep, oh, oh, that's the best. Oh, boop, beep, pop, this and that.
Hey, I'm just hanging here, this and that, and just wanted to call and ask you a couple questions. One
Got
of them
it.
Is love that you're into the Lemon Twigs. Big fan. Would love to see a tour with you guys.
Well, tour like me with my music and them with theirs.
Yes, exactly.
By the way, I got to such a special experience. I have to brag about something. Last night, I did a little show here in town at the UCB. I haven't been there in years. I did this Christmas show that Nick Thune put together, and I played that song that I was just playing earlier that you can find on my SoundCloud. And then Father John Misty came by. Played a couple songs, and he played his cover of Trump's Pilot that I wrote.
Oh, excellent.
And he's such a great musician, beautiful voice, and it was very emotional for me to hear him play it. And the audience, some of them probably hadn't heard it before, because, I don't know, not everybody hears everything. And there's it's so interesting to watch people listen to that song, because there's lots of nervous laughter throughout it, because people can kind of feel where it's going. And do you know the song I'm talking about?
Yes, one you post on SoundCloud that he covered as well.
Yeah.
And I love
But by the end of it, it's fully an emotional experience, fully cathartic, emotional, where people are wooing and clapping and feeling like it's like releasing a little bit of emotion that needed to be released.
Sure. And I love your version of that song, but when he released his version, I mean, with everything he does in his music, he brings this real, like, visceral emotion.
That I can't get to. I can't get to it in my work. I can't get to it in my own expression. But I love that thing where it's like, I mean, from a guy that loves, you know, for example, I'm obviously a huge Randy Newman fan, and the parallel between me and Randy Newman and then Father John Misty and, let's say, Harry Nilsson, where you had the Nilsson Does Newman record, if you're not familiar with that, where Nilsson... Oh, yeah. I'd love for Father John Misty to just go ahead and make a whole record of my songs.
Because
he can add that extra element that I don't always have in my voice and my production. But
similar enough to where he'll get the point across fairly well.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call. A couple more minutes, and I'll take one more call. Who shall it be? Who shall it be? Who shall it be? Who shall it be? We got an Andrew Cisneznik. Andrew Cisneznik.
Hey, hi. You almost got that right.
Andrew Cisneznik.
Try it again.
Andrew Cisneznik. Snick-knack.
Can you guess what kind of name that is?
Is it Polish?
It is. Good one.
Well, how can I help you today, Andrew?
I'm just calling to say what's up. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
Happy my mom's birthday. It's my mom's birthday.
This is awesome. Great. How old is she
if
now?
You said she is 58.
Young bird. What would my taste of that?
59. No, she turned 59. I mean, if you really want, if you want, I could send you my PayPal and, you know, I could maybe...
That's not going to be a financial trajectory. I'm not going to pay for sex with your mom.
You're right. I mean, as my gift for her birthday. I'll pay.
Well, happy holidays to you.
Thanks. Likewise. But, I was kind of going in and out of the stream because I'm sans computer right now. So But I know you answered a couple questions about, like, you know, getting into biz and stuff like that, but I was just curious. I've started going to, like, random, you know, just comedy shows and stuff, this and that, and open mics around here. I'm actually from Jersey, and but ultimately I'm looking to go out west, and I wonder if you think it's a viable option to, like, go to, like, I'm Donald Trump. What's up? Private pilot. What'd you say? And I fly him
everywhere. Hello? Yep, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, I was gonna say, I was wondering if you think tax him too. I should maybe just actually try to go to college out there, because I'm a college dropout, and, you know, I've been doing shit for the last couple of years, or, you know, doing some of these, like, writing classes. Like, I've been going to UCB a little bit, doing, you know, thinking about signing up for those classes. Would you say they're as effective for comedic purposes, or would you consider, you know, I mean, obviously I think going to college would be a better option, but do you think, you know, taking classes like that, or UCB or some other similar place would be just as good? And you can
donate online. Gotta get back to you on that. Thank you, everybody. Cause when I'm gone, Alright, happy holidays, Andrew.
Yeah. They should
be. Take a listen to the show. I think you'll enjoy it today.
Okay. No blaming
them with me. Happy holidays. Over bye-bye. The line. Folks, this is the point of the show where I just want to say, for when we take off time for Cleveland. Listen to the rest of the song. I'll say my goodbyes for the year. And clear that tri-state sprawl. Let's send love to Andrew. I don't want to make him feel bad. I was sort of. I will find a field. Conceptual concept. I will conceptual take idea. Her down. Yeah, yeah. Scream. Everybody sing it with me. Justice for. Love you, Andrew. Wish you the best. Now, if I had to
oh, justice for you all.
Thank you, guys. And listen, let me say one thing, two things. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to Dave Weigel for calling in today. And thank you to Clu Henry for calling in and all the wonderful calls we had. I will try to do a show next week. Let's make next week the end of the year show. Check out my free music on SoundCloud, and you'd listen to the title of the track.
Merry Christmas,
is
everybody.
Finally, Merry Christmas, my master, Mr. Trump. That's the official name of that song. It is finally Merry Christmas, my master, Mr. Trump. And that is free for you to listen to and share with your family around the Christmas tree. Another point of business to discuss quickly. I've decided, you might not have seen me on Twitter very much. I'm in the same way sort of Vic and a lot of other people are saying, I need to step away from this a little bit, for my own health, mental health. And it's amazing how remarkably quick my attitude and mood shifted when I just sort of stepped away for a little while. And so going forward, my plan is to, take a break. I'm not quitting Twitter. That's not the idea, but I'm not really, I think the plan is not to visit the mentions page. Okay. So that's going to mean, I won't be engaging as much with you as an audience in the, which I've so enjoyed doing for these many years, but, will have, the person that does a bunch of our social media stuff looking out for anything that comes down the pike that might be, fun or funny or interesting. Cause I do love when you do send me your videos and songs and these sorts of things. So I will be on the lookout always for that.
And for any potential death threats that come in that might need the attention of the police department or such. So it is a way to keep me strong and healthy and happy and focused on the work. The work is the most important thing. And if you ever want to talk to me, you can call into office hours. I'll try to be there for you. And I'll try to be there for your family, most importantly. So until then, I will try to see you next week, if not just around the corner. And if I can vamp for one more second as I load up the HP sauce. Saucetown HP. Well, that came in hot, like a hot puppy. Thanks, guys. Love you.